amazing women that are going to get vulnerable with us today, and I'm so glad it's not me. So let's just get started and get to it. Let's welcome Ellen. Come on. I'm Ellen. I'm an addict.
Hey, Ellen.
So I didn't really know what I was going to share about today. I still don't, but I think that that's a good thing. It means I haven't, like, rehearsed and thought about it ahead of time too much. But I was talking to Ethan, who's been a huge part of programming. I don't know if he's programming chair or not, but he's been a huge part of programming on this committee. And I was like, what is the women's rap anyway? Because I've been to it, like, many a times. But I'm like, what the fuck does that even mean? And he's like, I don't know, dude, it's just the women's rap. I'm like, well, do I share my story? He's like, you just share. And I'm like, do I get a topic? He's like, no, you just share. And I'm like, okay, I need a little bit more direction in this. So we're just going to see where this goes. I like to look out and, like, see all the beautiful women and see all the strong faces in recovery. I don't know why that made me so emotional. I'm looking through and seeing women that have been a part of my early recovery that were here to lead the way when I got here. And I see women that have come after me that have been a part of my journey since being here. And I see women that are coming back that I'm very grateful that they're back. And that's a beautiful thing to be a part of, particularly because when I got here, the idea of having a relationship with a woman in that kind of way was not anything that I wanted anything to do with. I was good in, like, you know, a sexual nature to have a relationship with a woman, or in a resentful nature to have a relationship with a woman. I didn't have women friendships when I got here. I didn't know how to have that. The only relationships I knew, if you can call them that, I love it when people call them situationships. I'm like, that fits a little bit better. But the only relationships I knew how to have when I got here were the romantic sexual ones, man. And the people that I drug along with me in active addiction, or that drug me along in their active addiction, you know? So it's a blessing and a benefit of recovery as I stay here to be able to have these relationships with women and men that are based on things other than what can you give me and what can I give you, right? I guess we still do that. It's just kind of in a different way, right? And I was sharing, because I've had some things that have happened in my life. We'll see if God sees fit for me to share this in a minute. But I've had some things recently, like in the last few days, relapses in behavior, kind of reverting back to those sickest behavior patterns like our literature talks about, that have really just kind of, like, swung me for another fucking loop. Because I can, like, be going along in recovery, and I can definitely get really hyper-focused on my significant other because he's also in recovery, and I can get really distracted with what he's doing and how that doesn't meet up to my expectations and how he should be doing this and how his sponsor should be this instead and how, like, all of these things, right? And what happens is my disease is doing the same thing that it's done to me my entire life, which is to distract me from my ultimate problem, which is me, and have me focus on the things that I have no control of, which is everything outside of me, so that I'm stuck in the problem and I can't get in the solution and I never grow and I never change and the same old whatever, fill in the blank, that I've always been, right? So some things have happened recently, and I'm on this step 10. And so I'm thinking about this today and I'm like, God damn, it just, because I still harbor judgment for others and myself, really it goes back to me, I don't want to sit up here with 11 years clean and tell you that I went through a shit again, expecting to find something in the relationship. That doesn't feel good to share that. It does, but it doesn't. It doesn't feel good to share it because it's against my morals and values that I've built in Narcotics Anonymous. And I don't like being out of line with my integrity. But it does feel good to share it because honest sharing is the antidote. Yeah. Yep. So I was reading, I've been reading a lot of stuff in my literature as of lately. I've really been trying to get back into a better connection with it because I lapsed on that for a while of what was in my comfort zone. And so I was reading in our Guiding Principles book and before this, and it was saying, when we find the message in our experience, when we find the message in our experience, what we have been through becomes useful. It's what you were sharing earlier. Our message is powerful because it is true. We listen to each other like our lives depend on it. When we hear another addict get to the exact nature of their experience, honestly and clearly, it changes us. Us. The details don't matter. We connect with another addict's message because the truth is not just something we hear, it's something we feel. And when another addict helps us make sense of our experience by sharing their own, we begin to recover. So, you know, when I got here, I had a lot of bad habits of, you know, keeping secrets and being deceitful. And you would never share that you went through somebody's shit or that you stole somebody's shit or whatever it was, right? But what I've learned as being as a result of continuing to participate in this program is that if I don't share honestly, whatever that means for me, right? Whether that's a speaking platform, whether that's with my sponsor on what's really going on, whether that's with my friends, whether that's at a meeting level, home group, you know, whatever it is with my sponsees, if I don't share honestly where I am, I can't get help. And so even though I feel shame, guilt, embarrassment for those things, it's so important that I get help, right? That's why I fucking came here. I needed help. So I'm on the step 10 right now. So let me just tell you the story. So here. It's very challenging to be in a relationship with someone that's also a recovering addict. The root and the core of my disease is self-centeredness and self-obsession. So is his. And I like to think that his is, you know, like worse than mine. But the fact that I think that is maybe, if there's a worse, what makes mine worse? Okay, so let's just like be real with that. So it's challenging. And it's so fantastic when you can share that with somebody in that way in the recovery process. But when we're not in the recovery process, right? Or when defects are flying, or somebody's fucking feelings got hurt, or somebody's ego got touched, it sucks. It's challenging. And so, so we got into this argument the other day, and it was about nothing because it's always about nothing. Okay? It's never about anything. Have you guys ever heard that like saying or like, is this gonna matter in 6 months from now? My answer is yes. Yes, goddammit. It's always going to fucking matter. It's not. Usually it's not. So so it was about nothing. And he blew up, like, volatility-wise. And I was like, yeah, I'm not doing this. And I got in my car and I went to work. And then I came back because I had forgotten something at the house. And a paint can was thrown across our garage. And so then I was really pissed because I'm like, are we five? You know what I mean? And so I had an opportunity at that moment to just let it go. I could have like gotten back in my car and gone to work. But because my number one defects are what they are, I feel the need to try to control the situation, right? And I tend to do that when I have a fear of losing control, right? Our literature talks about that. Well, guess what? I have a fear of losing control all the time, which is laughable and ironic because control is just an illusion anyway. It's not even something that's fucking real. But my disease will convince me that it is, and it will convince me that the only way that anything's going to be okay is if you micromanage the situation. This situation needs your input, your opinion, your structure, your guidance, if you will. In order for things to be okay, and that's just not true. So, because of things that have previously happened, and this is where I take ownership, and because of fears, insecurities, things of that nature that I came into the relationship with, that I've carried with me my whole life, I got scared. Well, why all of a sudden are you being volatile? Why are you freaking out like this? You know what I mean? And so the answer to those questions has to be, oh, you're fucking around on me. Surely you've done something to me, because this world revolves around me. Surely you've done something to me, and you feel secret guilt and shame about it, and you don't know how to handle your feelings, and so you're blowing up at me. So here's where it gets real fun. That fear enters, that fear-based thought, that disease-based thought starts talking to me and enters my mind. And again, there's another moment here, right? There's another moment where I have a chance to call my sponsor. Okay? Disease doesn't want me to call my sponsor. Right. This happened to be a time when I didn't. And I hate to get up here and like only share about that, because please know that in the 11 years that I've been here, there's been many a fucking times that I have, right? Otherwise, I would not be here. But this is one of those moments where I didn't. And I feel like it's so important when we share with each other that we're always sharing the both, right? Yeah. I need to know how the disease is still fucking up your life, but I also need you to tell me how recovery is working in your life. Because I feel like I can get so drawn into the disease concept, what I suffer from, da 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 da. It's important, but how the fuck do I recover? That's still just as important to me. They're both important. So I had that moment, right, where I could have called my sponsor. And I was like, nope. So instead, there was an iPad, our son's iPad, in the kitchen that's logged into his Apple ID. And there's not even like Messenger on there or iMessage or anything. There's fucking photos. Like the photos are backed up. That's it. But I'm so in diseased-based thinking and in obsession and compulsion, right? Well, I'm in obsession at this point, but I'm getting ready to get into the compulsion. So I'm so there, right? Full-fledged defects. God is out the window, right? Self-centeredness, self-obsession, all the things. Fear. Insecurities. That I open the photos. And then just as quickly as I open the photos, I'm like, this is fucking retarded. And I close it and I put it up. And then he walks in the back door. And he's a recovering addict too, bro. I'm not slick. You know what I mean? I think I'm slick. I put the iPad down. And he's like, what are you doing? So here's what I feel the most guilt and shame about that I'm going to work through, that I'm in the process of working through on these steps. Another moment where I could have just said, you know, let's just choose humility, let's choose honesty, let's choose acceptance, let's choose any one of the fucking principles that we have to choose from. And instead, I chose hiding, deceit, dishonesty, excuses, rationalization, justification. I chose the things that I'm more used to practicing even after 11 years of being here. I still have my whole life before Narcotics Anonymous experiencing the practice of those things. So I was like, nothing. And he was like, really? Because it looked like you were like trying to find something. And I was like, there's not even messages on here. Right? So now I'm like going around the question, right? Not really answering it, because I don't want to come clean on the fact that I did something deceitful. I fucked up, right? I don't want we are in a relationship where for us that's unacceptable. I don't want you going through my shit, and I don't want you going through, you know what I'm saying? Let's not go through each other's shit. Not because we're hiding stuff, but because that's just not, for us, that's not the relationship we want to have, right? We'd like for it to be built on trust. Not, oh, I didn't find something, so it must be okay. Okay? So then I went to work. That was that. He didn't press the issue, and I was grateful for that, and I went to work. And don't remember if I called or texted my sponsor first or one of my best friends, but doesn't matter. Reached out to both at some point. Sponsor was out of town, was like, hey, I'll be back this evening. I can call you when my flight gets in. And I was like, great. Don't have to tell her right now. And then I talked to my best friend, and I kind of like told her what was going on. And so that moment, right, where I chose to start to share honestly about what was going on, gave me the ability to get through the rest of the day without going down the same fucking path and causing more harm, right? And so then I go to work and I finish the day or whatever, and then I'm on my drive home. And I'm thinking, because I'm on this 10th step right now, and I'm doing an actual written inventory. That's how I do my 10th steps every time I'm on it. I'm doing an actual written inventory from the IP, living the program, every single night, writing it in a journal, right? Ooh, there's some good questions in there. Like, you're not going to accidentally forget to put something on in those answers if it's happened that day, right? And it's sectioned out by the just for today lines that we have in that chapter with questions that relate to that line of the just for today. So it goes through everything, right? And I love that IP because it doesn't just say, like, well, what'd you do wrong today? What do you need to make an amends for? Where do you need to, like, admit your faults? You know, it doesn't just ask questions that are related to that. It's also like, did you go to a meeting today? Did you reach out to a recovering addict today? Did you share your experience in Strength and Hope today? Just like in step four, this is not meant to beat me down. It's just meant for me to inventory my day, my assets, my liabilities, the pros, the cons, the things I want to improve on, the things that went well, right? So that I can be the best version of me that NA allows me to be. So I'm have all these questions in my head on the way home, right? Because it's the step I'm on. I'm really trying to apply this stuff right now, and integrity and self-discipline and all the things in this step. And I'm on my way home, and the rationalizations start. It's like, you know, this is probably one of those times where you could just not repeat the behavior, make an indirect amends by not repeating the behavior, living amends, okay? And I'm not trying to use those things in a negative way because they're valid. But I have to make sure, because I'm still an expert at self-deception, I have to make sure that I'm not using a living or an indirect amends as an excuse to not amend my behavior directly where I can, right? So I'm going through these things, and I'm like, this is probably one of those things where you could just, like, indirectly make a living amends by not repeating the behavior. I mean, it may cause more harm if you tell him what happened. And then I literally laughed out loud in my car. I was like, girl, you are fucking crazy. Go tell the truth, right? Go make an amends. Come clean about your behavior. Pull your own covers. Because if you don't, it's going to be that much easier to do that behavior again. And I hadn't acted out on this behavior in a long, long time. That's why it felt so shitty. Because it's just not in alignment with what I do today. And so I got home and I was like, I have to tell you something. I was even like vacuuming the rug, which I never fucking do. But I was like, I just need like something to do with my hands. I was like, hey, will you come in here? And he was like, I'm in bed. And I was like, it's really important. And so he came in and I was like, hey, I have something to tell you. And I turned the vacuum off and he was like, uh-oh. And I was like, no. I was like, I was dishonest with you today. I did something deceitful. And he was like, I know. What? No. He said, I know. And I was like, about the iPad thing. And he was like, I know. And I was like, well, all I can tell you is that I'm sorry. That was wrong. It's not the person I'm trying to be. And I will do my best to not try to repeat that behavior again. And is there anything I can do to make it right? You know? So I did that. And then the next day, I'm talking to my sponsor. And we're going through all of this, and it's like, the basic text says that one of the biggest stumbling blocks seems to be placing unrealistic expectations on ourselves and others. That comes up almost every time I share, because, like, that is me, right? When I'm disappointed in other people, it's because I have an expectation, usually unrealistic, that wasn't met. When I'm disappointed in myself, I feel guilt and shame. It's usually an expectation, right? There is nothing in our literature that says that we get clean and we become perfect. Right. And I can remember, you know, perfectionism has come up on this round of steps for me. And it was a word that, like, really just irked me before this round of steps. I didn't like it. Didn't think I was one, didn't think I acted out in that way. And my sponsor was like, really? Like, we're still not seeing this after, like, all these years of, like, X, Y, Z? But what it was is I had this, you'll have to keep track of time on me, okay? I have this faulty belief structure that says that perfectionism is for people that are, like, it says something along the lines of perfectionism is for people that actually think that they can attain perfection. Okay, stay with me. What my disease says is, well, nobody can be perfect. Okay. But if I'm always disappointed because I never quite measure up, that's probably what that is. If I'm always comparing myself to others because I don't measure up, that's probably what that is. I can remember, school was a big one, you guys. So, like, just to share a little bit about my story, I'm one of those that came into Narcotics Anonymous, and I had been in treatment a dozen times, and I had tried to get clean, and as long as I was locked up somehow, it always went pretty well. But the moment that I left, with every intention of staying clean, it never fucking happened, right? And then I somehow stumbled into this miraculous fellowship and program, and my life changed. So I was involved in everything I could be from the get, right? I threw myself into service. I threw myself into step work. I did whatever you guys showed me worked in your life too. And that came with not only spiritual benefits and relief and the, you know, relief for the desire to stop using and all the things and clean time, but it also came along with, like, the drive and desire to find out what I wanted to do with life, right? So I worked here for a while, and then in Tulsa, I'm sorry, and then, like, I applied to school to start doing some of, like, my undergrad stuff. Because I had dropped out, you know, you can't be on heroin and successfully graduate, or I couldn't anyway, maybe you can. So I went to school, and then I applied to vet school, and then I went through vet school, and I moved completely out of my comfort zone to Stillwater, Oklahoma, and I was there for 4 years, and some of the greatest times in my life, but also some of the darkest times in my life. At that point in my life, my best friend had relapsed less than a year prior. It was my first experience ever with somebody that close to me relapsing. I had been here enough years to watch a lot of people go in and out or out and not come back, but never somebody that was that close to me. So that shook my whole fucking world. And then not 4 months later, my significant other at the time relapsed, and my whole world was shook again. And things were so crazy that I was like, well, we're just going to stay together, and we're going to make it work. We're going to make it work. And eventually, if I can love you enough, preach to you enough, show you the way that the program works enough in the way that I live, certainly this will become attractive to you again, and you will stop using. And then 2 years later of constantly finding heroin in the house or syringes in my fucking front driveway, being at the lowest point spiritually that I can ever remember being, I was finally driven to a point where this opportunity presented itself, where it was like, okay, you've been here 7 years. Relationships have been a thing in your life for a very long time. You've never been willing to be alone. You've never been willing to look at yourself through the step working process while not in a relationship. There's some serious, I'm not saying everybody has to do that. I did. There was some serious trauma, some serious things I wasn't looking at, some serious stuff that needed to be healed. Could that have happened? Could that healing have happened while I was in the relationship? Maybe, but it didn't for me. And all I kept doing was going to the next one and the next one and the next one. And now here we are at the epitome of something going against my morals and values. I am someone with multiple years clean, going for my dreams, trying to apply the program, and I can't get out of a relationship with someone that's shooting dope in my fucking house. Going to meetings, sharing about it because I know it's going to save my ass, and feeling so much shame that I couldn't do better. Wanting to make the right decision so badly, but being so gripped by fear and the disease of addiction that I couldn't. You want to talk about shame, guilt, remorse, embarrassment? I can remember 3 o'clock in the morning, waking up and the bathroom lights on and the doors locked. And I had this obsession with trying to catch him in the lie. Like that was somehow going to give me the strength to leave. It fucking didn't, over and over and over again. But maybe this time it would. And I can remember, like, deceitfully, sneakily creeping towards the door and getting on the floor and looking under the floor. You know, exams tomorrow, all the things. Looking under the floor. Of just like, maybe I'll see something where I can for sure confirm that he's using. He hasn't stopped in 2 years. For sure can confirm he's using, and then we can bring it up, and then we can solve the problem, and then we can move on with our life. I was locked and loaded in that. So, trying to remember why I went down on that tangent. Guess I just needed to share it. What was I talking about before that? Anybody know? Perfectionism.
You were just checking to see if we were listening.
Perfectionism. So, like, I've been in denial about this defect for quite some time because I'm doing all these things and I'm going through one of the hardest times in my life. That's why I needed to share that. It was one of the hardest times in my life. You can stay clean through that. You can end the relationship if that's what you need to do. You can make it to the other side clean. You can jump back in. You can still be working steps. You can move on and you can get better. That's what I've done. That's what I do. So during that time in my life, though, it was so hard because it's like everybody's taking tests. And everybody likes to share what they got on the tests. And it's like, I would study my ass off. And I already felt kind of out of sorts. I'd gotten used to this feeling, but I already kind of felt out of sorts because I was like one of the oldest people in my class, right? I went back to school later. So there's all these people that are like 23 with their fucking world ahead of them and all these things. And they're like drinking all night and going to the strip and taking the test and getting a higher fucking grade than I did. And I obviously don't drink or go to the strip or do these things. I'm studying all the time, wrecking myself. And even though I made great grades, it wasn't enough. Cannot tell you how many times I talked to my sponsor about this, just being infuriated because how unfair is it that they're getting better scores than me? So that's that thing, right? That I never, the disease tells me I just don't ever quite measure up. That's the thing within me, like all these other defects, right? When they're attached to the fears that I've carried around with me my whole life, if I don't get to that in my step work, if I'm not looking at that and sharing it with you at a meeting level, then I'm really not getting any better. And that's the thing that as much as I want to blame it on him, if you hadn't have done this, if you hadn't have said that, I would not feel the way that I feel. That sounds so real in the moment when I'm hurt, when somebody said something that makes me feel a certain way, brings about a feeling that makes me feel a certain way, that feels so real, right? Makes perfect sense. Ben was sharing, he's like, I'm such a logical person. I'm like, me too. That works against me because my disease, this main speaker on Friday was saying this too, my disease uses my intellect and the way that I logically think and problem solve and critically think against me. It uses it against me. It will say, of course, if that person hadn't have said that or done that thing, you wouldn't feel this way, right? Cause and effect. They said this, you felt this, And the problem with that, right, is that, and I talk with one of my sponsees about this all the time, my feelings can still be and are still valid, but it doesn't mean that he was responsible for creating them. Right? If I do a certain action, if I say a certain thing, and somebody's feelings get hurt, I'm not saying that the thing that I did or the thing that I said doesn't matter. Oh, well, that's just your feelings. You know what I mean? That's not what I'm saying. My feelings are valid, but I have a responsibility to look at the way that my disease manifests itself in my life. And it does that through insecurity. It does that with fear. It does that by telling me that if I just control the situation, I'll feel better, right? That's the thing that Narcotics Anonymous gives me, man, is like going through this step working process, having this beautiful relationship with a sponsor that I've had for years. It uncovers things about me that I didn't even know were there. My whole life, all I've ever done is blame people, places, and things for my fucking dilemma. And that never got me anywhere. It just got me to the same dope houses, same situations, still broke, still living in my truck with my dog in the car, needle hanging out of my arm. That's what that got me. You know what I mean? And in recovery, what that got me was toxic relationship after toxic relationship. In recovery, what that got me is being willing to risk my entire life and clean time for the sake of somebody else that didn't want this. That was hard for me to swallow, because I'm telling you, my first several years here, I knew fucking everything about recovery, and I would tell you about it. So it was hard, right? It was hard. But in finding a bit of humility with that, and acceptance, and understanding that sharing vulnerably with you is the only way I'm going to get better at that and applying action, I got freedom. I'm going to share this last thing, because again, I'm like pretty much in obsession over step 10 right now, but in a good way. Okay. I feel like this is really important, because whether you're new or old or in the middle, there are times I have faced where it gets hard to stay here. So this is one of my favorite things out of step 10. The self-discipline of recovery calls on us to do certain things regardless of how we feel. We need to go to meetings regularly, even if we're tired, busy at work, having fun, or filled with despair. We need to go regularly, even when, especially when, we're feeling hostile toward the demands that recovery makes on us. We go to meetings regularly, call our sponsor, and work with others because we have decided that we want recovery in NA. And those things are the actions that will help assure our continued recovery. Sometimes we're enthusiastic about these activities. Sometimes it takes every bit of willingness we possess to continue with them. Sometimes they become so woven into our daily existence, we're hardly aware that we're doing them. So this whole thing, self-discipline being an action that I can take, something that I can do regardless of how I feel, has been like the thing that has kept me here, right? Because there's nothing better than going to meetings and working a step and doing life when I feel like doing it. But there is nothing harder than continuing to do those things when life doesn't meet my expectations and when it doesn't look the way that I think it should look. When I don't feel the way that I want to feel. When he's not doing what the fuck I want him to do, right? There's nothing harder. But I also know that, like, there's nothing else that's going to keep me here, man. If I don't have this, I'm dead. I'm dead, or I'm institutionalized, or I'm whatever, all the things that we can come up with. This is the only thing that has given me the life that I have today. And I'm here for the long haul because I enjoy every bit of it, even the shit, with you guys, right? We're on this journey together, and I'm so grateful. Thank you for the committee to allow me to be a part of something so beautiful. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Ellen. That was amazing. You did really, really, really good. Don't leave. We have one more. Up next is going to be Heather from Fort Worth, Texas.
My name is Heather. I'm an addict.
Hey, Heather.
You know, I think this is really neat. Maybe this has happened before, but I've never noticed it. But my husband, Ellen's husband, was sharing at the exact same time as she was. And my husband, and we'll get the CD afterwards. And my husband is sharing right now. So two couples, you know, my husband and I will celebrate 15 years of marriage next month. We've been together for 18 years since I had 16 days clean. I went to my very first NA function, and I met him. And we've been together ever since. I didn't want to come. Definitely don't want to share. I'm in a process of of growth, of discovery, of feelings, of vulnerability that both of y'all have mentioned. And it's gonna work out. And it's a beautiful process. But I also don't wanna cause harm by sharing. So we're just gonna see what happens. I don't know. there was a lot of similarities in her story. You know, she was talking about perfectionism. I remember when my very first sponsor told me that was an issue for me, and immediately, I have a logical brain, right? And I'm like, well, that doesn't even make any sense because it's not even possible. But I'll share with you my struggles with perfection and how it's affected me way differently than how you've interpreted yours. I got clean June the 24th of 2005. I met my husband with 16 days clean. We struggled, if you could imagine. We struggled that first year. He had a newborn baby. My boyfriend had just died. We got in this relationship. He had custody of a five-year-old. You know, we ended up moving in together after about a year. And it was rough. It was rough. I don't know what he was thinking. He had 2 years clean, 2.5 years clean. I had 16 days, you know. And I was 22. I got clean when I was 22, and I got in this relationship, and he had a five-year-old kid. I didn't have kids. I didn't want kids. I had no desire. And I remember he asked me that. He's like, are you sure you know what you're getting into? And I'm like, let's go. Bring it on. You know, just the self-centeredness of, you know, wanting what I want, which was him, instead of looking at, do I really know what I'm getting myself into? So I struggled a lot there. You know, my husband worked on an oil rig on and off for 2 weeks at a time. So it was like my burden to bear to raise a five-year-old. And I'm 22, you know, 22, no kids, in school, you know, a year clean, zero parenting skills, right? And all my defects are coming out. It's like control. Why can't you put the pencil in the drawer? Because you have math every day. Like, why is it every day that you don't have a pencil, you know? And that was my that was my effective communication. You know, why are you crumbling your paper? Why? I had no parenting skills. And what I know about myself today is I could be more compassionate. I could be more emotional. I'm a type A personality. I'm task oriented. I'm always busy. I never sit down to relax. I'm go, 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 go all the time. And so I know these things about myself, right? I've learned about myself through the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous and many rounds of steps. And I'm up here today once again. I just processed a 4-step, right? 2 weeks ago. And a lot of the same stuff came up, but a lot of new stuff. You know, do you always get a new defect? you get new defects on your list, right? Like, control was never on my first defect list. I was such a people pleaser that I'm like, control? You know, I did everything for everybody, and I couldn't talk or communicate very well, and I was just shy, and I didn't have a lot of relationships in my life. So control showed up on my defects list, you know. So I struggled with my with my stepson a lot. You know, we butt heads. It was tense. He wouldn't quit lying. He's in the program. He's here. He's got 4 years clean. He's 23 years old, right? And I know I could have done better. And I know I caused some damage in his life. I wasn't abusive. I never hit him. I always provided for him. I was there. I was present physically, you know. I mean, I had my own kids. And David and I have we have a 10-year-old. Let me get it out. We have a 10-year-old and a 7-year-old. She just turned 7 yesterday. And we also have custody of my husband's 17-year-old as well. You know, when I got pregnant with Tristan, like, I made a commitment to myself, ladies. I made a commitment to myself that I was not going to bring another human being into this world in a tense household. And that I was going to love him and support him and invest 100% into my children. And y'all, that's exactly what I've been doing for the past 10 years. That's exactly. I used to judge people. Like, oh, you don't make as many meetings because your kid's extracurricular? Or you make meetings on Mondays and Thursdays? Like, who does that? You know, I made a meeting a day every single day for 7 years. Until I got pregnant and I had my kids, you know? But everything I've judged somebody else for, like, I've had the opportunity to do myself. So let me tell you about the past 10 years of my life, right? I went to school. I bought a home. My husband and I got, you know, we got married when I had 3 years clean. We're active in recovery, you know, committed jobs, working steps. I mean, there's shit. There's always shit, right? But, you know, I finished school, bought a house, had my kids. I made that commitment. You know, I've got a lot of fears. You know, Daria was sharing about fears of something happening. And I'm like, my kids might be addicts, right? So I need to, and the busyness in my head, right? I'm like, they need to be in extracurricular and this, and I'm going to read with them, I'm going to do all this, and I'm going to try to control the whole situation and the outcome so that one day down the road, they're going to feel they're not going to use Symbiotics. You know, I grew up poor, so I didn't get extracurricular type stuff, right? So I'm like, we're going to be busy, and their lives are going to be full. So my son's been in, you know, gymnastics and jujitsu. He just got his yellow belt in jujitsu like 5 years in. He's played soccer for 6 to 7 years. He plays basketball. He's taking computer classes. He's in the gifted and talented program. I read with him every single night. My daughter's in gymnastics and dance and jujitsu. And my older daughter is in jiu-jitsu. My husband coaches jiu-jitsu, right? So I like my lives and my evenings are full with my kids. You know, I'm completely 100% invested in them. So like, you know, my husband's had his job for 16 years, you know, and I've had mine for six, and we make some decent income. I'm like, we need to invest. We need to, like, do something, expand, you know, like, branch out. And we bought our very first house in 2011. You know, it's like $100,000. That house today is worth, like, $350 or something. But we bought it real cheap. We paid it off. We owned our own home with no note. And somebody was like, well, you can refinance that. And you can pull some money out and buy some more properties. I'm like, that's a fabulous idea. Let's do it. And so that's what I did, you know, started investing in rental properties 6 years ago. So on top of all the kids stuff in my full-time job, and I do try to exercise and I have sponsees and a sponsor and step work and all the stuff that recovery entails, I also manage 17 different tenants and rental properties with all of their repairs and renting them out and showings and payments and mortgages and refinances and go and all that stuff. So and y'all need to follow me here, right? So I'm getting somewhere with this. Okay, recovery has been just great. The sky's the limit, right? So that's fine. I've had those for a while. They're not too overwhelming, but with the kids and a full-time job, it can be sometimes. So my husband gets a great idea about 18 months ago. He's like, we need to start another business. I'm like, let's do it. Let's go. Let's go. So, and we find something for my son to do. You know, he's 23, didn't go to college, kind of floundering around. I'm like, we're going to start a carpet cleaning, air duct cleaning, tile and grout cleaning company. Right, it's not a lot of overhead. We had to buy some equipment, and here, like, off to the races. But there's phone calls, like, you know, 8 to 12 phone calls a day, and scheduling, and complaints, and chemicals, and appointments, and cancellations, and taxes. Taxes suck. Yeah. We have rental properties and a business. And then on top of that, we decided that we were going to build a house. We were going to build a house in the same process because life is just so wonderful and life is just so great, right? So, and all of that was on me, right? Like the countertops and the paint and the layout and the roof and the landscaping and the flooring and all those little decisions, like looking at windows and flooring and blinds and like all that shit takes a lot of time. So a full-time job with four kids in extracurricular recovery, 17 rental properties, a side business, a new construction. And on top of that, like, I take on, like, I'm a doer, right? I'm a doer. You could tell. I'm a doer. I'm busy, like, constantly. You know, somebody's like, oh, I binge watch Netflix for, like, a whole Saturday. I'm like, huh? You know, like, I haven't watched a single episode of one thing ever once. You know, like, I'll turn the news on when I go to bed, and I try to read. And I have, like, a little bit of 30 minutes to myself to, like, read, relax, just freaking sleep, right? But what's happened and what was happening that I didn't know about. Now, my husband had been communicating this with me for years, and I did not listen. You know, my husband's kind of insecure. I'm not. I've never once looked through a phone or an iPad until recently. She was talking about the iPad, and it was just killing me inside. I was like, is this lady really talking about an iPad? So, like, what I do, again, it's perfection, right? Like, so I told my husband when we started that business, I said, I can't do that. Like, you need to take full control over that. Like, I have no time to start another business. That needs to be all on you. And he's like, okay. So maybe about 3 to 4 months into that process, I was like, hey, well, how are we doing? You know, like, with what we're paying in advertising versus what's coming in, like, where are our finances? He was like, huh? So what did I do?
Took it on.
Yeah, I said, okay, well, I can help. I can help. But I do that not with just with my husband's stuff, but with my kids' stuff, and I take on everybody else's stuff because I think that I can do it better because it's not going to be done perfectly unless I do it. So everyone needs my help. My kids need my help. My husband needs my help. Everybody needs my help because I can just do it better. Instead of allowing somebody else the process of like failing or learning or growing, I take all this shit on. And y'all know what happened to me? You know how much time I had left for myself or relationships or marriage? So my husband, you know, I knew something wasn't right. I'm like, why don't I have any friends? Like, I don't want to, my sponsors call me, I'm like, you know, I'm calling my sponsor, like all the important basic maintenance stuff went out the window and I didn't know it was leaving. I'm like, look at my life. It's wonderful. It's great. I'm doing all this stuff. I'm functioning. Like I'm getting 8 hours of sleep. I'm exercising. You know, I'm just taking care of business. But I wasn't. And I haven't been. So I woke up one day, you know, I processed this 4-step. And I knew, like when I started writing on relationships, like, I knew before I started writing on relationships that it was not going to be comfortable. Because there weren't any. Yeah. You think I have time for friendships and dinner and activities and phone calls and, like, relationships take investment. You know what? And I gave 100% of that to my children. 100% of that, and I left zero for anyone else, including my husband. But I was there, you know. You want to have sex? Fine, we'll have sex. Hurry up. You know, I'm freaking tired, you know. We were there coexisting, you know, and I would ask for help and not get it. And he told me repetitively for the past couple years, he's like, I don't feel loved. And I said, Mommy, I love you. Do you see all this stuff I'm doing for you and our family? Like, I love you. Like, never once have my eyes strayed or my thoughts strayed to anyone else but this man. He's my best friend. But like I lost something in there, you know? When you devote all your time and your energy and your resources to businesses or financial success or just your kids and you neglect somebody's emotional needs, there are consequences for that. And I'm not saying that what he did was my fault. So about 2 weeks ago, so he told me for a number of years that he didn't feel loved. And I shrugged it off and I blew it off. I'm like, you're just insecure. I'm loving you the same as I've always loved you, you know? And so it's great when you go on an iPad and you don't find anything. But what happens when you do? And I did. It was not an accident. I think it was an act from God, ladies, to find my way back. And it sounds crazy because I'm like, well, what do I do? How do I act? What does everyone think? Jamie. Yeah. Jen. It's crazy because this all happened on the same day I processed my 4-step. I processed my 4-step and I left there and I knew my relationships were lacking. I knew my friendships were lacking. I knew, you know, there was avoidance and isolation on my 4-step. I'm like, how am I avoiding anything? But I was, you know, I quit doing little things over the years. You know, I quit kissing my husband. I always want to wear my clothes on. I'm always tired. Whatever. And there was a lot of other little things that I just quit doing. Yeah, so his eyes strayed. And I don't know if he's sharing about it now. This is 2 weeks. Well, the incident happened about 6 months ago, but I just learned about it. So I left my sponsor's house. You know, I just wrote on my 4-step. I was like, I'm going to pick some relationships that I'm going to put my effort into, you know. And one of them was my stepdaughter. And one of them was my husband. And the other one was my sponsor. You know, and I'm going home and I'm on this like emotional, this high, like invigorated because like I've been missing intimacy. Except with my 2 kids. I've been missing intimacy for years, ladies. For years. And it was a really hard pill for me to swallow. And again, I'm not saying that it's my fault, but like things aren't always black and white. Because, you know, again, you could ask me, well, what would you do in this situation? And I'm like, well, I would surely have principles and I would do this and I'm not going to be taken, you know, like I could sit there all day and project, you know, that's why it's important. If you don't have that experience, have lived it yourself, don't you dare tell anyone else what they should be doing with their lives, right? Because, like, I think this whole situation happened for a purpose, right? Like, I started looking at my husband again with a desire. I'm thinking, well, we have sex once a week. You know, we're married 18 years. That could be a lot sometimes. Sometimes a couple times a week, but that was it. You know? No feeling, no passion, no just like whatever. And like I've been given another opportunity once again through the steps to make a commitment to myself. You know, he got rid of all his shit. He's like, I'm getting off social media. I'm giving my iPad away. He gave it to my daughter. He's just as devastated as I am, you know. And then what do I do like the very next week? I'm like, we're going to go to marriage counseling. We're going to read this book. We're going to, I'm going to go to meetings separately. You know, but that's what I do. You know, I'm trying to fix this again. And it's not mine to fix. But I was, you know, and I was real quickly, you know, the first couple of days that I noticed that I was doing that. I'm like, what am I doing? Because I'm like, I have a logical brain, again, that like takes me away from emotion, takes me away from people. The disease of addiction like completely isolated me in my own home with wonderful, fabulous stuff all around me. You know? Because the law, you know, so immediately, I'm not answering another damn call for that dang company. Take me off that list. I'm done with that. I'm done with this. And a big thing, too, is like I do all this stuff, right? And like my husband, he's like cooking dinner, taking out the trash, going to pick up stuff. Like just he immediately, like I know what the issue is. I do too much. He does stuff. He He does the fun stuff. He takes the kids to Six Flags and Mavericks games and jujitsu, and, you know, he does stuff. You know, helps him in the bath, puts him to bed. Like, he does stuff. But, like, I do all the cooking and the cleaning. And then I've been decluttering my dang house for 6 months, throwing stuff away, packing, decluttering, so I could stage my house and list it. It's currently listed right now. And I have been stressed the fuck out, you know, for a while. And, like, I'm done. I'm done. You know? I need to focus on me.
Yep.
I need to focus on my self-care. Like, it got to the point where, like, I'm so freaking tired. Like, I don't want to wash my hair. I don't want to do crap. I just want to lay in bed for 30 minutes because that's all the time I have for myself. Go away, husband. Go away. I don't know. It's crazy. You know, I feel like I have feelings again. And I, you know what's crazy is, like, I didn't even know it was happening. I didn't even know that this progression was taking me to a place where I would feel backed into a corner. You know? But I know there's freedom. I know there's growth. Dar was just sharing, right, about pain. We grow through pain and recovery and often find that such crisis is a gift. You know, and it's all about my perception, right? Because I could be like, oh, and I'm not saying that I don't have doubts or that whatever, or that, you know, I have questions and all that stuff. And it's painful, man. It's like a knife went straight into my heart and twisted it. But, like, I know that change is coming. You know, I know that healing in our relationship, in an 18-year relationship, is happening. It's currently happening. You know, I looked at those two little perfect kids that wake up and they go to school and they have both of their parents happily together. You know, my daughter told me the other day, she was like, Dad, why don't you ever kiss Mom? Oh. And I was like, huh, you're right. So anyways, I told my husband right when that happened, I said, cancel my speaking and get, I'm not going with you. I'm not going there. I'm not sharing. None of that stuff. You know, like, I'm not doing it. And again, I don't want to cause harm for the people sitting in this room that know him. Because he is a good man. And we make mistakes.
Yeah.
Keep looking at my watch, because...
About 5 minutes.
It's okay.
Recovery is... changed my life in so many ways. You know? I never thought that I would have the opportunity... And the things and the people that I have in my life today, you know, that I would be able to be a good, caring mom, that I can look somebody else in the eye with respect and dignity, that I can feel like an equal person in the workplace or at school or with my neighbors or wherever it is. I've put a lot of effort into figuring out who I am. You know, there were some breaks in there, you know, like my last sponsor, you know, my last four step, which was probably 5 to 6, maybe even longer years ago, you know what I was writing? And I was writing about my stepkids, and they would ask me for stuff, like toothpaste. They would be like, hey, can you go get me a poster board for school? I need it tomorrow. Or I'm out of deodorant. Can you go? And I'm like, no. It's not in the plan for the day. Like, I just... impeccable time management. Like, just don't mess with that. You know, and I was writing about that on my step work. And I'm like, why does this bother me so much? It's because you're asking for my time. And I have none. But it was, you know, and here I am again, same defect, the control, the perfectionism, the disease manifesting itself in another area of my life, writing on the same stuff, you know, not noticing that I needed to take time for myself, lying to myself and saying, well, you exercise, you know, 4 to 5 times a week and you get 8 hours of sleep and you, you know, like that is your you, you know, and that's not enough. It's not enough. Anyways, I want to just thank all the women that came to this. Love yourselves. Take care of yourselves. Nurture your relationships. Nurture the important people in your lives. 'Cause at the end of the day, it's all we have. All the stuff I have stuff. You know, I'm trying to secure a future for my kids, for them to be enabled, freaking spoiled, rotten brats. I don't know. Who knows? You know? I know there's some of that. I know I've got stuff to work on. You know, I'll have 18 years in a couple months, and man, I got some work to do, ladies. I got some work, but you know what? I am in the right place for work. I am in the right place for support. I am in the right place for help. Oh, I'm glad that's over with.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.